Hello, this is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today we're with Temple of Health Radio Show, and we have the pleasure of interviewing once more Dr. Irvin Laszlo. Today we're interviewing him on science and the reenchantment of the cosmos, the rise of the integral vision of reality. Our previous interview with Dr. Laszlo was probably 4 or 5 months ago, and that interview was on science in the Akashic field, the integral theory of everything, which preceded this book that we're doing today. And that interview can be found at www.plasticoast.com under resources under radio show. And for those of you who have not yet become familiar with Dr. Laszlo's work, I would recommend you take a listen to that interview as well. Thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Laszlo. It's great to have you back.
Well, it's nice to be back again.
And I really enjoyed the second segment, which is Science and the Reenactment of the Cosmos, which is a further discussion of basically the search for the integral theory of everything and how to explain the various relationships between energy, information, and consciousness. Would you like to give the listeners a little bit of your background? I'm looking at your biography and note that you are the author or editor of 69 books translated into 19 languages, and I just think that's a tremendously amazing
accomplishment. Actually, that's a bit outdated. Now we're up to 84 books and 22 languages.
There you go. There you go. So you're updating us. That's great. That's great. So you started out as a concert pianist or musician. Would you like to give a little bit of your background and how you became interested in the field of consciousness?
Well, I was, as a child, I had my mother who was a pianist and my uncle who was a philosopher. And
okay.
So I had both influences as a child.
Uh-huh.
I was discovered as having a talent for music very early, and from the age of 9 I was playing concerts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I won some international competitions when I was 14 and 15. I went from Hungary, at that time it was the Iron Curtain. I got sent out to the West, and then I got to New York. I had a big debut recital in New York in the spring of 1948, when I was 15 years old, and that was played up very much by the critics and had expressed in Life magazine, in Time and Newsweek and all that. So I had a career in music, which I pursued until I was in my 20s, but my interest in philosophy and in philosophical questions that I thought only science can solve has continued. And when I got married and had a child in my late 20s and settled in Munich and in southern Germany, then I began to take this question seriously, and I started reading and so on, started writing, and my first book was published more or less spontaneously by a publisher coming across my notes. And then I got an invitation to Yale University, and so it went on, and then I got a degree at the Sorbonne, and so I switched over to being an academic from being a musician, and started doing research and writing for the UN as well, and so on. So I had several reincarnations, I would say, in my lifetime, because I was a musician. Then I was a professor of philosophy and science, and then I was an international civil servant leading a research project at the United Nations. And I'm an independent researcher who founded the Club of Budapest and have a number of international research projects running. So I'm sometimes looked upon as kind of a new a futurist who's talking about what kind of world that's awaiting us. So my main interest has been, as this book that we're discussing illustrates, the reconciliation or the rapprochement between science and spirituality, because I feel both of them represent very fundamental elements of our human experience.
And what really impresses me is that you not just tend to the academic discussions of these things, but actually try to create organizations and systems for their implementation toward world, the global consciousness project and all of the other things that you're doing. You're actually trying to apply it to help improve things on our planet, which I think is so important.
Yeah, now we are having a major project starting just about getting off the ground now on the 21st of June, which as we are talking is the day after this. It will be launched two new websites, which will be accessible by everybody. And all of these are oriented to the idea of world shift. And we say world shift prepared to be implemented by the year 2012, by the end of 2012. So all our projects are called World Shift 2012, and you can see it at .org as well as .tv. So these describe some of the things that we are trying to do, the idea being that we need a basic transformation of the way we think of ourselves and think of our world, of our environment, so that we start behaving differently and we can make this world sustainable and peaceful instead of unsustainable and violent as it is at the present time.
The other thing, when I was reading Science and the Reenactment of the Cosmos, that struck me is that the answers to our problems are actually accessible through the field as well. Is that a conclusion that you've come to as well, that there are no insolvable problems if the Akashic field actually, or the A field actually, is the basis of everything that we can access?
You know, evolution doesn't come with a money-back guarantee. I mean, the majority of the complex species that have ever existed on Earth have become extinct. Those that survive have managed to respond to the challenge of finding, transforming in time when they become no longer sustainable, because they are, aside from a few whales and sharks and others, most of the species that we have evolved. They are not in the same way that they were before. So we don't know. What we do know is that species manage to solve the challenge or to meet the challenge of progressive evolution, and they do so. Certainly, it must be because they are connected with the environment. They get information from the environment. That's not a consciously elaborated information, but it shapes them. It's what the great physicist David Bohm called information with a hyphen. Information that forms the recipient. Mm-hmm. So we have, so the A field, they are connected with each other as well as with our environment, and if you would recognize this and perceive these connections and act on them, then I think we can solve the challenges of our progressive evolution, for the current bifurcation, the current tremendously critical times.
What about the concept that if this information field that you describe in your first book and expand on in Science and the Reenactment of the Cosmos, if this field is actually existing over time, I mean, it's not just in this time or the time, you know, 2,000 years in the future, it would seem that you could go into this field via consciousness to extract information and energy that could be used to solve problems you have currently based on patterns that exist in the future. Does that make any sense?
Well, I think this field contains all the information on ever anything that ever happened is in some way the traces of whatever has happened in space and time.
And that includes the future,
preserved
does it not?
In holographic mode, like in a hologram.
Right.
Where all things are there in a very, very subtle but very real and effective and extremely condensed way. So we can all retrieve from this field whatever information we want that concerns what has already happened. What is already up in the future, I don't think that actual present, it hasn't happened yet, and I think the future is yet to be created. It's not something that already decided. So the question is, do we get enough knowledge, enough wisdom from about ourselves, about our world, so as to inspire us to act in a way that corresponds to our real nature? And I believe our real nature is one of being organically connected, organically united with each other and the whole human community and with the whole biosphere. Just like all other species have this organic unity of other species. They all fitted in symphony with the environment. Only humanity in the scope of the past 200, 250 years has exempted itself from this universal harmony. But we could regain it if we do not think that we are such a separate individual, which are unconnected from each other and unconnected from the world, that is all just foreign things. We are actually part of that, and it is part of us. So that recovery of that ancient wisdom, which was there in the spiritual traditions, which is there in the true religions, in the true spiritual aspects of all the religions, then I think we have a chance of applying the knowledge that comes from science, applying that knowledge that comes from engineering, from the wisdom of how to manage ourselves and our environment, and apply it in such a way that we remain in harmony, in synchrony with our world. And that, I think, is the crucial matter to recover that.
And there are some who say that the original sin was the idea of the separated self, and that from that all the other sins or missing the marks from the ancient Aramaic have progressed. Let's go back and talk a little bit about coherence and how the idea of coherence led into the idea of the A field and the relationship of information, energy, and consciousness. As a little bit of a background, because that's where you start this book. Can you help the listeners with that?
Coherence is a fact, and it's a surprising fact, because that you would expect from the classical physics, which was founded by Isaac Newton, mm-hmm. is that all things are separate from each other. All things exist against a passive background, which is space, which doesn't interfere with what's happening, and all things are at best connected with each other through energy, through like billiard balls, so cause and effect. These are the famous laws of motion that discovered and described by Newton. Now, if you Newton himself didn't believe that this is all that there is to reality. However, he published this, and it was so tremendously successful, taken up, that people believe that this describes the true nature of reality, and there is nothing more than that. So this kind of approach of a mechanical, fragmented, machine-like universe, this underlined all the revolution of science in the modern age. In fact, science was forced to adopt this view because the church would not have given it permission at the time, you know, when they had the trials of Giordano mm-hmm. Bruno and yeah. Galileo. They would not have given permission to science and scientists to inquire into what they consider the true nature, the spiritual nature of man. So scientists are forced to deal with what they could measure, what they could experiment with, which were really these mechanical aspects mm-hmm. of the world. The more subtle aspects were not available for experimentation, for observation at the time. And this is the view of science of the world, a view of a giant mechanism which runs forever once it gets into motion, and this which we can interact and which we can manipulate. That's the world that has inspired the Western world and Western technology in the span of the last 200, 300 years. So now that we have reached a level where this kind of approach is producing degeneration in our environment, is producing increasing fragmentation and disjoining in the human communities between rich and poor, powerful and powerless, and so on, we find that this kind of selfish, self-centered approach of thinking of ourselves as being the center of the universe and everything else being stranger and just part of an external mechanism, this has turned out to give way to a recognition that there are ways in which we're connected with each other, that there are ways in which the universe evolves as a whole system, almost as a living system, and the biosphere itself evolves together. That nothing in this world, as biologists now know, actually evolves by itself. It only co-evolves. So this co-evolution is a great symphony that evolves together, that develops together, and that is based on a sharing of information, which is active information, information on which we can use in order to develop ourselves and develop ourselves in harmony, in coherence with the rest of the world.
And I think it's important for people to understand that what they are actually perceiving through their five senses, or in some cases, if people have more than five senses of perception, the sixth sense, so to speak, or the higher senses, is not all that's out there. This is written later in some of the people who have written sections in the latter part of your book here point out that it's, as far as the hubris of mankind goes, we really have to realize that we're only seeing that part of the world that we can perceive, not all that is. And I think that's a very humbling aspect to reality. It makes me wonder what else is out there.
But, you know, this is truly humbling, but at the same time, that should give us confidence, is that we know that we only perceive consciously at the present time only a very small segment of the information that's actually reaching our brain.
Right.
Because
yeah,
it's reaching us through our senses, but through also sorts of intuition, so all kinds of direct ways that quantum physics is only now beginning to understand. So actually there is more information that's reaching us, and we could open up.
Right.
Because
exactly.
Our brain only delivers, only operates on a small portion of what it could, of its potential. You know, it's tremendously underutilized at the present time. So when people, we are talking about people who say that they're enlightened, or people who are geniuses, or they have true insights or whatever, they're using entire faculties that ordinary individuals in the Western world today do not use. So
there is
a way to grow. There is a tremendous potential for human consciousness to grow and develop.
I think the first step of that is to go ahead and use both sides of your brain, you know, the side of your brain that you used in your music career and you developed, you know, more fully during that career has probably helped you a great deal to understand the concepts of or get the information from wherever you're getting it from, probably the Akashic field, to bring these theories into existence. I mean, these theories come in not based on logic alone. They come based on right and left brain functions.
Absolutely right.
As far as I can see.
Right. I have learned to trust what's sometimes called intuition or insight, a spontaneous insight, sometimes called a flow experience, you know, by psychologists. So it's something that happens that is not fully under conscious control. It happens to me quite often that the same kind of experience that I had when I was a musician, when you play and then things seem to flow, things seem to fall into a pattern, and you're caught up in a big dynamic, and it carries you forward. It happens to me also when I write, and sometimes when I give a public talk, and and the audience is receptive, sometimes ideas start flowing, and we allow that to come, and sometimes things come into the mind that I didn't think of before. And I try to remember them afterwards. And sometimes I can learn very much from the things that I've been saying without consciously knowing that I was saying it.
I think, too, we're guided to situations, other people, other books, or, you know, whatever movies. It doesn't really matter where the information is coming in. But if you pose a question to the universe, which I do all the time, I mean, especially in my field of medicine, you know, what is the root cause of this patient's disease, you know. What happens is that information comes in from very unexpected sources to answer that, often over the Internet. You know, you'll get an email from somebody you don't even know, and in that email is the answer to your question. And I think it's just magical that happens. But perhaps that's the Akashic field. It's like you have your personal interaction with this field if you will open up to it, you know, open up to the possibility that all information can come to you. You really can access things, but you first have to ask the question.
This is absolutely right. I'm so glad you mentioned this, your experience with this healing. Because I do not have this gift myself of being able to sense other people, but I have people around me. And in fact, I've been treated for the past 25, 30 years by persons, several actually, who have got to know me and who can perceive my bodily condition, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
and they feel what is going on, the energy flows in my body, and they can do this sometimes from a distance also when they're away, and they just call me up and tell me what I need to do. So there is information coming to us about each other,
mm-hmm.
That will be tremendous utility. And for people like yourself and my colleagues and friends are those who are opening up an entire new dimension in medicine and healing, which Larry Duffy, you know, the famous doctor, has said that the new, the third phase of medicine will be non-local medicine, medicine that is based on information that's just present everywhere.
And I would say that this field of science, which for a better term we can call medical intuition, is really a direct utilization of the Akashic field. And the great promise it has is that it will be much less expensive. I see, especially in America, we have a couple of usually bizarre symptoms, and often bizarre symptoms related to spiritual growth or consciousness, shifts in consciousness, and neurologists are suddenly ordering $5,000 to $10,000 worth of testing, none of which is going to be positive. You know, it's all going to be negative. The MRIs, the scans, this, that, and the other. There's not going to be a shred of anything in that testing that is actually going to determine why this person is having neurological conditions. On the other hand, if we take them to the healing room and have a couple of healers just spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes with them, balancing the energy field, all of their neurological symptoms go away. So there is a crisis in healthcare in America. You've probably heard about it on the news. Obama's
the
drug
crisis everywhere in the world.
Yeah. Right. And so why not utilize this new emerging technology, because it's really a spiritual technology, in order to pinpoint the areas that are problematic? And then it's fine if you go ahead then and order the tests that are going to be positive. You know, I think there's nothing wrong, as you in your book so aptly point out, there's nothing wrong with science. Science can absolutely be used to bring things into our physical reality and determine the relationships and the cause and effect, so to speak, once we're into the third dimension. But I really think we need to utilize these higher aspects of our consciousness to pinpoint what we really need to test for. And sometimes, like Larry Dossey points out in his books, we can utilize action at a distance, or the distant healing and era 3 medicine, to actually shift the energies so that we don't actually have to do surgery or give a drug or radiate somebody. Tumors even can be treated in this manner. I mean, there's all sorts of evidence that this will actually limit costs in healthcare, especially diagnostic costs and maybe even treatment costs.
Well, I think cost is certainly a factor, but I think it could improve our health tremendously. It could improve keeping us healthy, because much of the medication that we get today, as you yourself, Doctor, I'm not, but I'm just aware of this,
mm-hmm.
is overshooting it. It's like shooting a cannon at trees. It's you're trying to cure one thing, and perhaps you're curing it, but at the same time interacting with the rest of the body. It's a very expensive cure. Typically the case of what you're doing in case of cancer, where you're trying to kill some cells and you're damaging the whole rest of the organism.
Especially the immune system, which you need to prevent other cancers from rising up. Basically in medicine, if you're replacing something like a hormone or a, you know, something like insulin, something that has a function that's missing, there's probably nothing wrong with that. I mean, it probably is really intelligent to do that.
Yes.
But when you're blocking
when
you're blocking a pathway, especially all the drugs that have had all of the really, really bad side effects block the pathway too well. You know, in other words, the older drugs blocked at 80%, but once you created something that blocked at 99%, you started getting the really bad side effects. So, you can sort of put medicine in different categories. You know, I'm a surgeon, so surgery is very useful. Surgery we're not anywhere near the development of consciousness where we can consciously put a broken bone back together that's in, you know, going in two different directions. Maybe someday we'll be able to, but right now, you know, we probably need to set that bone surgically. But certainly for diagnostics, I think diagnostics is where we need to look. And that's why I've just been fascinated by the concepts that you bring forth in your books. Would you like to go into a little bit more detail on what the Akashic field is, how you present it in terms of its relationship with the physical world and also with our consciousness, how we can interact with it?
Well, this field is part of reality. It's really the most fundamental part. It's totally turning on its head our ordinary, our inherited, our standard concept of reality. It's another concept which I mentioned a little bit, just a couple of minutes ago, is somehow that a space is passive and everything just happens like bits of matter moving about in space. Now we find out that matter itself, this bound energy, they are standing waves of energy, and they emerge from an underlying dimension, underlying field. And that the real reality, if you ask what is the real reality, but the fundamental reality, is not these bits of matter. It's it's really the field from which they emerge and into which at the end of the life cycle of this universe, which is almost certainly not the only universe because they're cyclic universes, it will fall back. So the concept is very, very different. You have to think of space as not something that separates things. You have to think of space as something that connects. Because space is not empty and not passive. Space is full of energy. According to quantum physics, it's full of virtual energy, of enormous density of energies. It's some calculations, one square inch of space, or cubic inch of space would contain about as much energy as all of the manifest energy associated with all of matter throughout the galaxies. But this is virtual energy. And then there is also dark energy. What we do know is that whatever emerges in the world has emerged through the creation of particles out of this fundamental field. And what we now have to add is that whatever has emerged from this field continues to interact with it. Because it's as though coming out like something like the sea. You can think of a drop or a spray emerging from it, and then somehow seeming to exist separately. That's actually still part of the sea.
Right.
And what happens to one happens to through the sea all to all the others. We are learning that in quantum physics that all things are instantly entangled, as the expression is being used by physicists, with each other. So that it's over space and time. There is no real separation in space. And these effects remain. There is no real attrition of them. So there is a memory in the cosmos. They happen also over time. They persist over time.
So this is
a tiny different ballgame. It's a different world. The world that we come to know now is a world in which all things emerge in the form of waves that interact, that create phenomena. We ourselves are bound waves, are standing waves of a very complex kind. We interact with other people around us. And this is not just abstraction, because it's probably the closest we can get to to reality, to the fundamental nature of reality. Matter as such doesn't exist. Energy exists, and information exists. Energy and information are two sides of the same thing. That fantastic emergence, evolution emergence, out of this fundamental field, which is, you could think of it as intelligence to the universe, the intelligence to the cosmos, very, very similar, functionally, you might say, equivalent to the spiritual or religious concept of the consciousness, a divine consciousness, because it's there, it governs all things, but it doesn't guide things in a way in which it determines what they are. It allows a certain level of freedom, but information is always there. And the systems that we are able to use this information, and we only ignore this information at our peril. Other species use it. If they survive, it's because they have used it. If we don't pay attention to this information, which is there in the world, which is there in every cell of our body, then we risk we take a risk of moving toward extinction.
And a good example of that would be the animals and also the indigenous peoples that had prior knowledge that they acted upon when the tsunami was coming in Indonesia. You know, there was an elephant that broke away from where it was being bound, and it had never done that before, and retreated to higher ground. So that's a perfect example.
You know, there were islands there that's all cut off from civilization, but nobody died from the tsunamis.
Well, except the modern people who were on the beach and didn't go anywhere, didn't know about it.
Yes,
so we are, you know, a portion of the more modern humans are disconnected from this field, this information
yes.
field.
And that is, I think, a root problem. That is at the root of our problems today.
Yeah, I think it is too. And this would be the void that is spoken about in some of the religious traditions. And it would also be the what meditators and other people doing spiritual practices connect with. I mean, I know when I'm doing intense meditation, I've done times when I've meditated 5 to 7 hours a day for prolonged periods of time. I know things that are coming way before they come, and things that I do not have any, you know, logical way to know, I still know. So, you know, consciousness for me is staying connected to this field, and certainly spiritual practices help that. But I think maybe our spiritual evolution in general is taking all of us more toward that so that we can survive.
I think we're moving very rapidly in this direction. That is the hope. That is the reason for the kind of cautious optimism that I have. Because I see a tremendous shift in people's thinking and in values. Mm-hmm. And this kind of realization that is surfacing that, yes, indeed, that we are not so strangers to each other, strangers in the world, that we are not entirely dependent on our own selfish motivations, and greed itself is not the way you get around this world. This is something is happening, and it's there is a kind of a consciousness revolution going on, or if you like, a spiritual awakening, that you can give it in different names. And when it comes together, when it begins to inspire medicine, as it does in your work, as it begins to inspire politicians, let's hope, as I think we have now a real chance that it might, then I think we have a chance to approach our problems in a constructive way.
And if we are truly all interconnected, as the theory that you propose would be a fact of, then as we work with the idea that consciousness is central to our spiritual evolution, I think we can actually draw out of the field and draw out of our collective, because it's not just individual, it's really collective thinking the solutions to our problems, whether they be, you know, healthcare, political, environmental, you know, all of the major problems that we are facing now. I think we have a chance to actually consciously shift our global consciousness, as you put forth in your book, that I have not yet interviewed you on, but I hope to someday. But that was the outreach of this work is your Global Consciousness Project.
Yeah, it is. As I mentioned before, we are starting all our projects with this idea of a consciousness-based shift, a world shift that's based on the evolution of our insight, of our consciousness, and the rise of a new spirituality in the world, which we call the World Shift 2012, because it's somehow in the public mind, it's an archetype. But I think there's a good reason for it also, that at the end of 2012 will be a critical period. Not necessarily the end of anything, or a certain end of civilization, but it's the end of a phase, end of an epoch, and which could bring about the dawn of a new epoch. One doesn't change if the old thing still works. you need a certain amount of breakdown, a certain amount of crisis to begin to change. And now we're entering crisis. We have entered a kind of crisis, and it's not just a financial crisis. It will be followed by a crisis between violence, between rich and poor, a crisis of the supply of water and of food and of diseases, because there are so many people, nearly 7 billion at the present time, and the wealth is so unevenly distributed, and the health problems are rising so enormously. So we are in a state of emergency, but this is not only danger, as the Chinese are new when they said about crisis, you know, Wei Ji, on the one hand it's a danger, on the other hand it's an opportunity. So
right.
This is the chance where things can change, because the old order has loosened up. And now we are on the threshold of a new order. And this new order could be based on what we could call an Akashic consciousness, and the consciousness mm-hmm. of our connections to each other, of drawing information, but which is there, from information which is in us and around us, and just opening up to it, as you say, when you do meditation and when people entering into this altered state, you get this information. If we can draw on this more, I think then we can change the way we act, not just by getting directives from politicians or incentives for a household economy and so on, but really from conviction, from a belief, and from wanting to change, because we see ourselves and see the world differently.
And I think when we see this, the collapse, like the global financial collapse that we saw, I just look at that and say that, well, that's a system that's disintegrating because it doesn't have any real value, it doesn't have any real substance, and it's not based on the ethical, you know, structure that it needs to be based on. So when I see things falling apart, like I think medicine's falling apart right now, some governmental systems are falling apart, it really would be expected at the end of an age that everything that is not solid, everything that is not based in the consciousness that is coming in will fall apart. And it does seem like chaos to some people, especially if you're invested in the old medicine or the old government or the old science. You know, it can seem like everything's falling apart. But actually, it's a natural thing to happen, and it doesn't have to be as scary as the, you know, the traditional press might present it, you know, on the news. It's really actually a relief that these old systems are disintegrating. It's almost like they're disintegrating magically, you know.
It's so important to find that there is a positive aspect to it. If I may mention now, I have on the internet an e-book, you know, a book that you can pick up and you can download free of charge, because I wanted to make it available to everybody.
Uh-huh.
And it's called Finding Bliss in the Shift.
Great.
You know?
Yeah.
And the approach for that is simply www.shiftingbliss.com.
Okay.
You know? And then you get this book, which is now available in 5 languages, English, French,
right.
German, Spanish, Italian. And we are talking about, with a co-author who is an entrepreneur, who is a well-known businessman, we are talking about both the dangers and the tremendous opportunities, the tremendous ways that the shift can bring fulfillment to individuals, not just sacrifices.
Well, I think that's very important. People vibrate at different levels, and many people right now are vibrating in fear, uncertainty, you know, a lot of the more negative emotions, and they have to realize that they have the opportunity to shift this toward a more positive outlook by what they allow into their consciousness. I mean, if all you ever watch is the doom and gloom on the news and don't read some of the things like, you know, Shift in Bliss or some of the other works, you know, the works that have been put out on 2012 that I think the Mystery of 2012, Predictions, Prophecies, and Possibilities by all of the major writers. I interviewed Greg on this book not too long ago, Greg Braden. You know, you can either look at 2012 as, you know, the end of the world and, there, you know, the massive destruction and all of the negative things, or you can look at it as this book does, The Mystery of 2012, and the consciousness research leaders have spoken about what they think is coming. And, I just...
And that's up to us. That's up to us still. I mean, the future is still open.
Right, it is. So we are creating it, but the portion of the consciousness is vibrating in fear, vibrating in scarcity, vibrating in the negative emotions may actually be becoming eliminated. In other words, I see people who are completely immersed in negativity, creating accidents, creating disease, creating, not consciously creating, but, attracting to them the results of what they're putting out. And that could go ahead and help take them out of the picture for now. They actually can end up, as you said, each of us are a continuum of this field that appears to be separate, but actually isn't separate. But if you vibrate at such a rate that, or such a lower rate that you actually go back into the field, and maybe later on to come up again, the idea of reincarnation or the idea of coming up again with the memories of your prior incarnations would also fit into the Akashic Field theory.
It does, because indeed, I don't think anything disappears.
Right.
So if not consciousness, even if our bodies disaggregate, the consciousness continues to exist, and it could pick up a new life, and it could begin to continue its evolutionary journey, as it's always said in the doctrines of the karma. So
right.
I think this field is much more than just an abstract science concept. It really deals with the most fundamental nature of our mind, of our life, of our existence.
So if we are approaching something in 2012 that is like a portal or a birthplace into a new era.
It is indeed, yes.
How does that look in relationship to the Akashic Field? Have you explored that? I mean, do you have a theory about what that looks like at the level of the field?
Yes. I think it's the awareness of a different kind of reality that is surfacing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's surfacing quite fast.
Okay. So something new
is
coming up.
It's amazing how much reaction I'm getting, response I'm getting to this notion of the Akashic Field. I can say that very only 3 days ago, I had for a couple of days here a film crew from Norway, where the film company is creating a documentary on what they call the new concept of reality, which probably they just called the concept. But the idea of the concept is the A field.
Right.
And what it can do. And they feel that they can create it. They have got the financing for it, and they're ready to go. They have started filming it here with me.
Mm-hmm.
They've recorded something like 3 hours worth of talk about this. This has a public potential, that people are interested in this, and they should be knowing it. They should know about it. But it's amazing how quick resonance there is to this kind of thing.
Well,
another interesting
people...
aspect is that I've been asked just 2 weeks ago by, I can't say the name of it, but a very major publisher, U.S. publisher, who asked me if I would write up my autobiography, which I have no intention of doing that because I don't want to deal with my own things. And they said, but it's so interesting. How did you come to these notions,
Right.
So I said, fine, I'll try to just put up those, just that element of what was my way to finding this kind of a concept. But, this kind of interest was simply not there even a year or two ago.
Well, I think you're, in your personal history, I think you were highly evolved in your right brain and also highly evolved in your left brain, and then were able to, to bring in the concepts because you were using whatever tools your consciousness had developed, probably in previous lifetimes as well, to conceive and bring in the information. I mean, you have quite an interesting history. You don't have the usual scientific background, which is primarily left brain dominant. And I think that's important to understand.
The discipline domination of the professional graduate school, only being learned and being made a super professional, a specialist knows about one thing and doesn't know too much about the rest. I've always been interested into seeing the bigger picture. So having started out as a musician, I had the freedom to move around and to get involved with intellectually with what I wanted to get involved. And then I started writing and so on. So I basically had a life that is, continue having a life, that is not conventional, that gives me the freedom to move ahead, to move around, and to inquire, to try to find out what there is and how we can make use of it, what there is. And that still continues to be my interest.
And I interview a lot of the leaders of consciousness and spiritual science and research, and what it seems they all have in common to me is that they synthesize information rather than just defend their own little corner of the world. You know, some people spend all of their energy protecting their little idea. And
you truly have
synthesized, you've not just synthesized things, you've actually brought in information in a cohesive package that you can understand not just with your left brain but also with your right brain. I mean, I actually go into meditation after reading your things and bring in, you know, things that I believe are coming through your book to help me understand how to solve problems in my world. You see how you've inspired me to use other parts of my brain to help solve things that I believe.
That's wonderful, because the knowledge, this capacity, everything was in you, and you've been using it. What you're getting, I think, from my books is just a small thing, but it could have some importance, and it's getting a kind of a confirmation that it's not just imagination, that this has a basis. And you can show also through developing the scientific concepts that you now have that this kind of information exists and it's accessible to us.
It is.
So this,
and all we have to do is ask the question.
Aha experience. Yes, I thought of this and I've been using it, but now I can understand that maybe there is, it's really also credible. I think that's an important element of bringing forward this kind of development in people and in society.
And you have also included in the book Science and the Reenchantment of the Cosmos, the round table of leading thinkers, many of whom are very important in consciousness research. I've interviewed Christian DeQuincy on his book, Consciousness, Zombies to Angels, and I'm going to be interviewing him on his novel soon. Of course, our video production company did Edgar Mitchell's video on conscious aging, so I got to meet him, and I've interviewed many of the other people that you have here on the radio show. So you've actually brought in all, you are truly inclusive of the community around you studying this, which is wonderful.
We are dealing with the same community, actually.
Right, we are.
And you might be interested, and your listeners might be interested in the fact that I have done a follow-on book, which is called The Akashic Experience, which was published a couple of months ago. It's by the same publisher as the other ones.
Right.
And here I have asked 20 people, including many of those that you just mentioned, but also psychotherapists and Stanislav Grof and Larry Dossey and Edgar Mitchell, of course, and Marilyn Schlitz and a lot of people, to describe in first-hand language their own experiences, which led them to believe that there is more to reality, more to the world that one can perceive immediately through our senses, and that really changed their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked 21 persons to come up with their experiences, all well-known individuals, and 20 responded immediately and positively. And the last one only said, yes, I had experiences like this kind, but if I describe them, what will my colleagues say of me?
That's true. Yeah, I have that book, and we hope to get you back on a little bit later to discuss it, because it's a great book. It really is. Well, we're coming up on the last few minutes here, Dr. Laszlo. Would you like to give your contact information one more time and any other things you'd like to announce for our listening audience?
Well, I'd like to suggest that make use of the fact that there is a little book of about 40 pages, available now on the internet, and you can download it free of charge, with commentaries. With people like Edgar Mitchell and Mikhail Gorbachev and Lester Brown and about 12 other people, well-known people, who are talking about why it is important to try to find satisfaction and fulfillment in a new way of behaving. This is accessible on www.shiftinbliss.com. Now, in addition to that, the project that we are launching, and I want to talk about my own website or about my own individual activities, but this project that I'm launching together with 12 other organizations, like the Institute of Noetic Sciences and the GOI Peace Foundation and the State of the World Forum and others, this is the project called World Shift 2012. Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a book published in September. We are launching it on the day 999, which is the 9th of September of 2009. Mm-hmm. But the website is opening on the 21st of June, which is tomorrow. And I suggest that your listeners might want to just pick that up and look at it, worldshift2012.tv, an interactive site where people can put in their own comments. You can upload blogs and also videos and kind of thing. Another site that is worldshift2012.org, then you get information on what we had in mind. And what we want to do, of course, with my colleagues and friends, is to launch this kind of a revolution, a quiet spiritual scientific revolution, which will bring about a better understanding and appreciation of the nature of reality, of human nature as well, to bring about the kind of values that could lead to behaviors that enable us to live in peace and in a sustainable way on this small and very highly ravaged planet.
It may actually enable the human race to continue to live on the planet rather than to become extinct, as so many of the other species.
Yes, indeed.
At the present time,
the so-called BAU scenario, BAU scenario, business as usual scenario, the chances of 7 billion people, which you practically have today, surviving on this planet for more than 10 or 15 years are very, very slim.
We either
change or we really face very serious breakdowns. But I'm confident that we are on the way to changing.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a great interview, and I look forward to having you back to talk about some of these other works we've talked about today and some of the works that are coming out in the future. I've really enjoyed the interview, and I wish you well, and have a great day.
Thank you. It's wonderful to talk to people like yourself who are acting on this new knowledge and these new insights and are doing a lot of good. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. This is Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week we will be interviewing Dr. Alan Hamilton, who is a neurosurgeon, on his book, The Scalpel and the Soul. And in July we have Keith Amber the first week, Stay Centered in the Middle of Chaos, which is a great spiritual information for these times. On the 11th we have Andrea Rosenoff on the magnesium factor, and you can hear how magnesium is critical in the coming shift in your in terms of your physical body. Then we have Dr. John Turner, Medicine, Miracles, and Manifestations on the 18th. And Dr. Turner is also a neurosurgeon. I think it's interesting. We have two neurosurgeons writing books on spiritual science. We are truly in a revolution in that regard. And Noetic Science, which is Thursday, June the 18th, July the 18th will be, July the 16th is Dr. David O.U., who will be speaking about consciousness and healing, a medical doctor's journey as a patient and practitioner of holistic medicine. That's at the center at 7:30 p.m. on Thursday, July the 16th. Again, thank you very much for joining us. We've been interviewing Dr. Irvin Laszlo on his book, Science and the Reignite.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plastikos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong, it was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plastico's were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plastico's and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plastico's did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plastico's is a bargain.
Plastico's, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677.